Welcome to the Weekly Take and an extra special episode with our old friend Henry Chin doing a third quarter update. Henry's been on the road a lot lately, just got back from Asia. Henry, welcome back to the U.S. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Spencer. It's great to be back at home here in Dallas.
Great to have you, Henry. And Henry, a big picture. Third quarter is now behind us, and it was a very positive surprise, both from a capital markets and a fundamentals perspective. We saw better volume in both than I think either one of us expected, certainly here in the United States. What's your point of view, Henry?
Third quarter was, to our surprise, the global capital market is doing fantastic well and leading by the US market. And for the real estate fundamentals, office leasing, industrial leasing, retail leasing, everything is to the upside. So to us, third quarter has been fantastic as beating our forecast.
Let's pull the lens out. Where's the best opportunity today? What do you think, Henry?
Yeah, Spencer, it's a fascinating conversation I had in Asia. I was talking to so many different big investors. And if I am the capital allocators for now, my personal preference is I am going to overweight the US, remain relatively neutral in Europe, and a little bit cautious for Asia Pacific. The reason I'm doing so is all about the pricing. I think over the last 2 years, we see some substantial repricing across the global real estate markets. As of now, US looks extremely attractive from a pricing point of view.
Let's dig into that pricing. Really, it comes down to a couple of things. One is interest rates, or the relative interest rates in one country versus another. But also, I might add that the US dollar has devalued against a bucket of global currencies about 10%, maybe even more in the last 6 months. How much is that playing into the relative value story?
I think number one, you know, given the interest rate is trending down, although the US is still in a relatively higher level, 10-year treasury is still lingering around 4%. So we are not expecting to see the substantial cap rate compressions. So the most of the total returns, the pricing for the US is coming from the recovery in fundamentals. That's what we are seeing. And when I was in Asia, just exactly what you were saying, the US dollar has depreciated quite substantially. For the Asian investors, the hedging cost is so low. It's lower, not so low, lower than before. As a result, it's a good time to come to the US. Highly liquid market, fundamentals recovering, hedging costs is lower, and we're expecting to see the interest rate to cut. So tick all the boxes. I think the US looks very attractive.
Mm-hmm. And then some of our colleagues, some of our clients suggest Europe looks pretty good. And the reason why they think Europe looks pretty good is because Europe has a lower interest rate environment. They have a lower cost of labor. Frankly, if you're looking at Southern Europe, you're looking at places that really got hit hard in the GFC and are only now really recovering, both from a banking and from a real estate standpoint. Would it be fair to say that while I'm agreeing with you, and maybe I'm a little biased towards the U.S., that the U.S. is a wonderful opportunity, that still there are some great opportunities in Europe as well?
Yeah, 100% agree. I think the Southern European markets, Spain is doing great. And also, you know, if we look at the liquidity, the depth of the capital and the repricing, UK looks very attractive as of now as well.
But I think when we talk about these great opportunities, whether in Europe, the US, or in Asia, I think we're talking about not just general opportunities. We got to go a little bit narrower now. Give me a little bit more, Henry, on which asset types you're finding most attractive today.
It's a very interesting conversation. I think, Spencer, if I told you about the living sector, the logistics sector, you would say, Henry, you're so boring because you just go with the consensus.
Henry, just for the record, you're never boring to me, no matter what you say.
And if I go for logistics and living sectors, it becomes a consensus. I think the run of those two asset classes continue. But we need to be super selective on the stock and the market. On the overall trend, my personal preference is on two segments. Number one is offices. Number two is retail. If you look at the retail, for example, we all know that globally, there's not much of a supply coming to the retail segment. Retail was from zero, not to hero. And we see the rental growth pretty much across the three regions. So therefore, I will pick retail as my one of the major pick. The second one is offices. It's fascinating to see return to work, a conversation has died down, even here in the US. So don't talk about return to work, don't talk about hybrid working, office is going to back to the major radar among investors. Not much of a supply, and the right stock is even less so compared to the previous cycle. So therefore, I have to say, office is my number one pick pretty much across the global major market.
Well, I'm going to go back to a quote you just said here. I'm stealing your phrase, zero to hero, which was what you used about retail. Is that what you're saying about office right now, too?
I think so. Office was from, you know, zero to hero as well. I have to say, Spence, to my surprise, this quarter, we see the stronger leasing recoveries activities pretty much across the U.S. market. Now, people talk about New York, San Francisco. In my mind, as a smart investors, they has already passed on their turning point. So what is the next turning point for the market is so important. So this quarter, we saw the recovery for LA, Chicago, and Boston. And so therefore, we continue to monitor those few markets, because once the market moves beyond the turning point, it probably still a good time for investors to looking at those opportunities.
You know, listen, I'm a huge fan of all those markets you just mentioned, but I really like to dig into the sub-markets. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I have a gig in Los Angeles in Century City. And Century City is where our West LA office is. And there are very few sub-markets in the country that are better than that. I'd go one step further. San Francisco is also seeing tremendous recovery because of the AI boom, which is driving all of that demand. But there still are pockets that are going to take much longer to come back. And I think that's unfortunately in many of the financial districts in some of these cities. Is that a fair way to put it, Henry?
That's a fair way to do so. But I was in DC a few weeks ago. I think the headline news for the DC tend to be very negative. But when not actually looking at the submarkets in DC, like East End, the vacancy rate is so low, and the still got that rental growth for some segment as well. So Spence, this cycle is not about the overall market, it's look at the sub-district and what are the major drivers. For the office, as of now, the major driver coming from three sectors. Number one is the tech sector you highlight. Number two, financial sectors continue to drive the growth. The third one is the insurances.
You know, we all talk about, you know, the best of the best office. And then we say, oh, then there's the worst stuff. I'm like, well, no, there's a pretty big space in between the two. And you know what the best use is for A-minus office? Office. And just using it better, more efficiently. And I think what you're going to see now is a revival of some of that space, in part because the best of the best product has gotten so pricey.
Yeah, and Spence, that's what I think. The smart investor should looking at the value-added strategies for offices and for retails, because we know that there's not much of a supply coming to the markets. A minus, B plus in the right locations is a great time to enter because the cap rate is high, and we know that sooner or later we're going to see some spillover demand into those A minus, B plus great spaces. As a result, it's a good time vintage to invest into those assets.
You know, I think that's the key word there, vintage. But I think that another top story is alternatives. Things such as senior housing, student housing, self-storage, data centers. What do you see about this shift into alternatives, Henry?
This is a very interesting question. I have to expense, you know, when I am looking at the investment strategies, I look at the two components. One component is talking about the play the cycle. So play the cycle is a classic office, retail, logistic, and multifamily. So that we can play the cycle. And the alternative fit into the category of a structural demand, structural changes. So senior housing, data center, all in the structural changes to underpin the demand. But one thing we really, really need to be mindful is number one is entry price. The pricing is so important. So, you know, if we got the traditional asset classes, it has repriced substantially, why I need to pay a lower cap rate for those alternatives? That's number one. And number two, particularly for some asset classes, we need to create a stock. So once you create a stock, are you sure we can meet the demand from the occupiers and also the exit cap rate? So when we are going to alternative, we need to be super mindful on the liquidity, the entry price, and the exit cap rate. But nevertheless, I think the alternative is important, should be part of our capital allocation strategies.
I think with the alternatives, one of the beauties of it, and I'll use self-storage as the example. 20 years ago, self-storage was a mom-and-pop industry, very, very poorly run from an operational standpoint, very inefficient. Then the institutions got involved, and they made it more institutional grade, not just from a quality of real estate, but from a quality of operation standpoint. And I think that's really the story for many of these alternatives. I'll point to one other kind of a niche asset class in industrial called industrial outdoor storage, which is very small. I mean, some people call them truck stops. They're not. You want to learn more, listen to the weekly take. But nevertheless, people are trying to aggregate that strategy and get that same operating efficiency, much like they got in self-storage, much like we saw in SFR, BTR, single-family rental, build-to-rent. It is that combination of basically fragmentation to aggregation to operating efficiency that makes some of these niche sectors a great story.
Yes, and then they create a stock to be institutionalized. So that's more of a value-added play, and that's through the ecosystem, once you turn into the core, you can exit to the core. For core manager, can generate a stable income.
What do you see coming down the line here? We're entering the fourth quarter. We're seeing great fundamentals. Capital markets activity is improving. How do you see the year finishing up, and how do you see us going forward beyond that?
I think 2025, to our surprise, given that so many noises around the policies about the tariff, year to day, the performance from the leasing point of view, for the capital market point of view, has beat our consensus, to be honest with you, which was a huge, huge surprise. For the capital market going forward for 2025, we are expecting to see a high double digit, around 16-17 transaction volume for 25. But don't forget, it's coming from low base. And the momentum will continue to moving into 2026. We continue to expect to see the double digit transaction volume growth on that part. For moving into 2026, I think the momentum will continue. And, you know, we are doing the 2026 market outlook and as of now, but I want you to know this year is somehow different. I want people to enjoy their Christmas holiday and New Year break. When they come back to work in January, they are going to see our latest insights for 2026. What do you need to do? And but overall, we do believe office, retail, multifamily, logistic, data centers, cap markets, we are in the recovery phase into 26.
I bet that if we went back to our first quarter update and then compare that to this, there would be a noticeable tonal change, because there was a real shift after the second quarter. I think the first quarter of this year, we were still sort of in the soup, and in the soup of inflation, we were still in the soup of uncertainty as it relates to tariffs and other policies. But since we've gotten past that, the mood is now gotten back to where it was. Is that a fair way to put it, Henry?
Yeah, I think so. To our surprise, you know, researchers tend to be overly conservative. So every single quarter we play the catch up. And so the fundamentals surprises us, capital market surprises us. So that shows that real estate is so resilient. Spence, something we need to highlight here is if I was doing some analysis to look at the overall stock market's PE ratio versus the commercial real estate stock PE ratio for the past 10, 15 years, I can tell you that commercial real estate market, it looks so attractively priced. So therefore, I think it's a perfect timing to look at a commercial real estate market as of now. It's a vintage.
Well, I think that's a very insightful comment, because when I speak to our rising professionals in the space, I'm like, look, there's a lot of proxies out there for value. But what you're suggesting, Henry, is that from a value standpoint, using the publicly traded REITs as a proxy, it gives you a real great insight that there is real value to be gained in private real estate.
Yes. And Spence, also, we are the CBI is the biggest real estate companies globally. We got so much internal proprietary data. I was also looking at our internal data. It all points out, and it's a leading indicators. You know, I just give you some anecdotes. We look at the office trade. Funny enough, a cap rate starts to compress in the right product. So just to give you the ideas, you know, public data as a proxy, we also look at our internal intelligence to make the better forecast for next year.
And I agree. I use not just our data from deals done. I look at our capital markets data for deals that we have in market. I look at the number of bidders. I look at the number of transactions that have closed. And some of those are leading indicators. The best leading indicator there is the number of BOVs we're writing. And so there's a lot of things we could see before they happen.
100% agreed. That's why we need to put all those publicly available data together with our private insights. I think that we can make a better judgment call.
Once again, Henry, we really thank you for coming back to the show, for your update for the third quarter. So thank you so much for coming out. Looking forward to seeing you next year for the 2026 outlook.
Thank you, Spencer, for having me here. I look forward to have a greater discussion with you before too long.
For more insights on the global economy and real estate sectors, check out our website, cbre.com/theweeklytake. Henry will be back again in January for a comprehensive look at the 2026 market outlook that he and his team are working hard on right now. And of course, we'll be on the podcast next week with a new regularly scheduled episode of The Weekly Take. Until then, thanks for tuning in. I'm Spencer Levy. Be smart, be safe, be well.